Dare to be a Daniel. Dare to stand alone. Dare to have a purpose firm. Dare to make it known. These words were penned by P.P. Bliss in the late 1800s. And no doubt, many of you here this morning are familiar with those words. Many times we think of this hymn, Dare to be a Daniel. We think of it as a children's hymn. But as we consider the message of the hymn, and as we consider the passage of Scripture from which this hymn is taken, truly it applies not just to children, but it applies to all of us here today, doesn't it? Dare to be a Daniel. The past several weeks we've been challenged and we've been encouraged by the life of Daniel. As we think of all the events of Daniel's life, we only know of a few of them. And all of them that are recorded in the Scriptures, two of them especially are fresh in our memories. Probably we've learned about these events, these stories, from when we were a wee tyke in Sunday school or children's church. In Daniel chapter 1, we read about Daniel and his friends and how they are resolved in their commitment to live for the Lord, how there is certain food prepared for them from off the king's table, and how royal wine was offered to them, and they remained resolved in their commitment not to defile themselves with the king's meat or with his drink. They asked instead for vegetables and water. And as they ate those vegetables and as they drank that water, the Lord blessed them, and they were more healthy and more wise than any of their counterparts. You see, Daniel and his friends were committed to do what was right. They were faithful to their God, even as young teenagers, because Daniel chapter 1, we have Daniel and his friends just teenagers at that point in time. But they stood firm, and they determined to obey God no matter what. The pressure from the world, the pressure of that society to conform to things that are anti-God. Now, as we jump ahead to Daniel chapter 6, we find Daniel once again resolved to do what was right. Only this time, instead of being a young teenager, instead of being trained in the Babylonian government, instead of being that teenager, he is now a man, an older man in his 80s. He is now a seasoned governmental official. He's faithfully served the Babylonian government for well over half a century. Now he's serving the Medo-Persian government under the rule of Darius the Mede and Cyrus the Persian. And here Cyrus is the king over the entire Medo-Persian Empire. And Darius the king, he's ruler over that area that used to be the Babylonian kingdom. And it's in this context that we read in Daniel chapter 6 an account that is very powerful, and it speaks of God's control, and it speaks of Daniel's commitment to God. Because in Daniel chapter 6, we realize that Daniel is confronted with a situation that would test his loyalty to the one true and living God. It's a situation that he finds himself in with life and death consequences. If he remains faithful to God, no doubt he's going to face death. If he compromises his beliefs, his life would be spared. So how would Daniel respond whenever he finds himself in this situation? Would he remain faithful to God? Or would he waver? Would he stand firm in his royal commitment, in his loyal commitment to his Creator, to his Heavenly Master? Or would he be ashamed to serve God? Would he be ashamed of worshiping Him whenever times got tough? And as we look at Daniel 6, we realize Daniel was resolved in his commitment to serve the true and the living God. He dared to stand alone for what was right. And the question for us this morning as we work our way through Daniel chapter 6, do we dare to be a Daniel? If you have trusted in Jesus as your Savior, you are a child of God. And if we are children of God, and if we are servants of the Most High, then we need to dare to be a Daniel. We need to stand up for what's right no matter what. We need to put everything on the line so that we can maintain an untarnished testimony for our great God and Savior. This morning, I ask you, will you dare to be a Daniel? I invite you to turn with me this morning to Daniel chapter 6. If you're using one of our Pew Bibles, it's on page 1027. Daniel chapter 6, we'll be working our way through the chapter. And first of all, we want to see how Daniel has a prominent position in the Medo-Persian Empire. Look there at verses 1 through 3 of Daniel chapter 6. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom and 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give account unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this king, then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Now, if we would jump back just one verse to Daniel chapter 5, and we read in verse 31, there's this man named Darius, the Median, who took the kingdom. And he took the kingdom, what was the former Babylonian kingdom, upon the death of the last Babylonian emperor. His name was Belshazzar. This man, Darius, was 62 years old whenever he took the reins of leadership. And this man Darius, that name Darius was very likely a title as opposed to a proper name. There's been a lot of debate as you read through the commentaries. You know, who is this man Darius? Well, very possibly it's a title that means holder of the scepter. You think of the Old Testament, the leader over Egypt, he's known as what? Pharaoh. Pharaoh is a title. You think of the Roman government, you have the Caesar, that's a title. Very possibly Darius is a title instead of a proper name. Some people believe that the man's name who was Darius, who was the holder of the scepter, was named Gubaru. Others would think that it's another name for King Cyrus, who was over the entire Medo-Persian Empire. But in either case, we realize that this man named Darius, after he took control of this area of the former Babylonian kingdom, he organized a very efficient system of government. At least from our perspective, it seems to be efficient. So over this vast stretch of territory, he sets 120 princes, or satraps. These are men that are appointed to be the protectors of the empire, or the kingdom. Probably they were in charge of the collection of taxes and other important matters. So you have 120 satraps or princes, and then above these 120 men, you have three presidents. We don't know the name of two of the presidents, but one of them, we do know the name. His name is Daniel. These are administrators, they're commissioners, and these three men were appointed over the 120 satraps to make sure everything was going well within the kingdom, probably to make sure that do you realize what he did back then? Do you realize that there's this relationship that's not proper? So you imagine these men, hours upon hours upon hours, probably searching the records of the political ongoing, the political decisions that were made in the past years, all of the things going on in the politics, the decisions made in the kingdom. They probably talked with any number of people that had worked with Daniel. You know, is there anything that Daniel had done in an underhanded way? Was there anything illegal that had been done? Anything improper? And as they spent hours upon hours, maybe days after days, trying to dig up dirt on Daniel, what did they find? They found nothing. No dirt at all they could throw at Daniel. Daniel was a faithful man. He was a trustworthy man. And Daniel's opponents came to realize, after hours of investigation, there was no dirt we could throw against Daniel that would stick. They realized, if we're going to take Daniel down, it has to be in relation to the law of his God. We have to use his law, the law of his God, to bring him down. See, Daniel was faithful to Darius the king as he served in the Medo-Persian government. But more than that, Daniel was faithful to his God, the Most High God who lived in heaven. Now, as we think about the conspiracy, and we'll look at it very, very soon here, this conspiracy brought against Daniel to the king, these wicked men did something against him to try to bring him down. But let's first of all consider, how did these men know that the only way to bring Daniel down would be in relation to the law of his God? How did they know that? Well, the answer surely is this. Daniel lived a consistent life. Daniel, day in and day out, he obeyed the commands of God. Daniel showed devotion to God in the way he dressed and in the way he ate and in the way he spoke and the way he behaved. Everything about his life reflected the law of his God and obedience and commitment to his God. Now, keep in mind, Daniel was a sinner just like you and I, but he was faithful. And everybody looking at him from the outside, anybody that knew him, realized Daniel was faithful to his God. He meant business in serving him. Daniel reflected God's holiness and love. Even in the midst of paganism, he reflected God's holiness and love. Daniel knew that Daniel worshiped, or Daniel's opponents rather, knew that Daniel worshiped the Most High God, that he kept his commandments faithfully. Daniel was not what could be called a secret follower of God. No, he was very open. He was outspoken in serving the Lord. So what about us? If people want to do us harm, if they want to find any dirt against us, if they want digging, what would they find? Would they find some dirt to throw at us and dirt that would stick? Or would they find us to be blameless? Would they uncover moral or ethical misdeeds in our past? Or would the only thing they could bring against us would be that we are faithful to God, that we walk with Him day in and day out? And yes, we realize, probably all of us looking back in our past conduct and our past lives, all of us have done things that we regret. All of us have done things that are wrong. Aren't we thankful that God is a God who forgives? But yet we strive to live blameless lives. We want to have a life as blameless as Daniel's life is or was. See, Daniel was committed to God. He was devoted to his God. And his political opponents realized that Daniel was committed to his God. And so his opponents formed this evil plan. They came before the king. They proposed a royal decree. Here was the decree. Whoever wants to ask a petition of any god or man in the next 30 days, it needs to be brought to you, O king. It needs to be brought to you alone. If it doesn't go through the king, then that person who made the decree, or made the petition rather, would be thrown into the den of lions. Now, if you were King Darius, probably you'd be quite flattered by this proposal to have all petitions, to have all prayers be brought to you for 30 days. Well, that makes you feel pretty important, right? Everybody would be recognizing you as a mediator between heaven and earth. You know, it's almost like they're placing Darius on a divine platform. And also, as we think about politically, it made good sense. Not too long ago, the Medo-Persians defeated Babylon. You have people from all different countries within this one umbrella of the Medo-Persian Empire. To have everybody going to one central person, Darius the king, and bringing all the petitions to whatever god it would be, bringing it all to Darius, bringing it through him, you know, that would consolidate power and authority. So Darius thought, well, this makes good political sense. And if all of his presidents and satraps and others were agreed, well, then why not do it? So Darius, maybe the decree was already written up by the presidents that brought it to him, but what did he do? He signed it. He probably imprinted his royal seal into it so that it could not even be changed by the king himself. So here's the king. He thought he had done something that was good for the kingdom, good for himself, but little did he know that one of his most respected people in leadership, in fact, probably the most respected, the most trusted, had not agreed to this. He was totally unaware of it. Daniel was staunchly opposed to this. So we look at verses 10 through 15. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said before the king, that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth thee not, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king, and said unto the king, know, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is, that no decree nor statute which the king establisheth may be changed. Daniel was a man devoted to God. Everybody knew Daniel was devoted to God. He served God faithfully. And for Daniel, it didn't matter whether the king had signed a decree or not. Daniel knew this was law now. But Daniel was not going to stop worshiping his God. Whenever Daniel was a young teenager, he was committed to God. Now that he's an 80-year-old man, he's still committed to serving God, probably even more so than he had been when he was a teenager. Daniel has a zeal for God. He hadn't compromised in the past, at least as far as we know, and he's still not going to compromise in the present. Daniel was committed to doing what was right. Yes, he knew that the king had signed the decree. He knew the consequence. If anyone prayed to any god, then the consequence was he'd be thrown into the den of lions. All the petitions, all the prayers had to go to Darius the king. But Daniel knew Darius didn't deserve to have petitions and prayers of that nature offered to him. Only God was worthy of worship. Only God was worthy of praise. Only God was the one who could provide for his needs. Daniel had prayed to God years and years in the past. That was his characteristic. And he was going to continue to pray to God in the present, even if the consequence was death. So Daniel heard the decree had been signed. Did he change his behavior at all? The answer is no. Was it an inner dilemma for him? Was he mulling over in his mind for a number of hours, well, should I continue to pray to God or not? I don't think it was a dilemma at all. Daniel was a servant of the Most High God, and he realized as his servant he must go to the Most High God in prayer. God is the one that could answer his petitions, not the king. So Daniel went to his upper chamber. He had the windows open. He kneeled down, and he prayed toward Jerusalem three times a day, just as he had always done. What did Daniel do? He gave thanks to God. He gave praise to God. He asked him for grace. Very possibly, he asked God for his own needs, praying for his own needs. He prayed probably for the needs of his Jewish people, for the nation Israel. Very possibly, he prayed for the Medo-Persian Empire, for King Darius. Daniel prayed on that day just like any other day, three times a day, probably morning, noon, and evening. Here's Daniel, windows open, kneeling down, praying toward Jerusalem. Very possibly in Daniel's mind, he was thinking of what had been written long ago by Solomon. We read this in Second Chronicles. Solomon didn't write these words, but this is what he said. Second Chronicles chapter 6. This is at the dedication of the temple. And Solomon said this, "If they sin against thee," talking about the people of Israel, "for there's no man which sinneth not, and thou be angry with them, and deliver them over before their enemies, and they carry them away captives unto a land far off or near. Yet if they bethink themselves in the land whither they are carried captive, and turn and pray unto thee in the land of their captivity, saying, we have sinned, we have done amiss, and have dealt wickedly. If they return to thee with all their hearts and with all their soul in the land of their captivity, whither they have carried them captives, and pray toward their land, which thou gavest unto their fathers, and toward the city which thou hast chosen, and toward the house which I have built for thy name, then hear thou from heaven, even from thy dwelling place, their prayer and their supplications, and maintain their cause, and forgive thy people which have sinned against thee." So here's Daniel. Where is he at? He is in Babylon. Okay, he had been carried captive years and years ago. He was serving under a foreign kingdom. But for years and years, what had he done? He had opened his windows. He had prayed toward Jerusalem, toward the temple, that place where God in the past had showed himself to be. And he prayed for himself, he prayed for his nation, he probably prayed for the King Darius that he served. As Daniel prayed, he probably maybe had in mind what David had done earlier, centuries ago. David said this, "I will call upon God and the Lord shall save me. Evening and morning and at noon I will pray and cry aloud and he shall hear my voice." Very possibly, Daniel was praying at noon and at morning and at evening. See, Daniel prayed faithfully to God. It didn't matter whether things were going well or whether things were not going well. It didn't matter whether he was safe in a situation or whether his life was threatened and whether his action of praying would spell certain death. Daniel prayed faithfully to his God. Now, Daniel's opponents, they knew Daniel. They knew that he prayed faithfully every day, three times a day. They were almost certain, I think they were counting on Daniel to continue praying even if this decree had been signed. See, it was Daniel's faithfulness that had shown his opponents, you know, this is how we can bring him down. That was their thinking. What if Daniel had changed his behavior? What if he had left the windows closed on that day and still prayed to God? What if he had gone downstairs maybe and prayed in secret? See, Daniel was still praying. Would God still hear him? Yeah, God still would have heard him. But think of how Daniel's testimony would have been diminished. Here, year after year after year after year, Daniel praying morning and noon and night with the windows open. Now after the decree, Daniel no longer is to be seen. His testimony would have been hindered. It would have been tarnished. And people would have thought less of Daniel, and they would have thought less of Daniel's God, no doubt. But here is Daniel, openly and boldly praying to God just as he always had. And Daniel's opponents, they're on the lookout. is Daniel going to pray? And they see Daniel praying. They find them, they probably are perched in a place where they can see Daniel plainly. Daniel was praying. There's no doubt in their mind. So they go to the king. They ask King Darius, haven't you made the decree that if anyone makes a petition of any god or man except to you, he's going to be thrown into the lion's den? And the king answers, probably not thinking anything of it, well, yes, I signed the decree. That's law. Nobody can change it. And then they go on to say, well, do you realize Daniel has disregarded you? Daniel has no thought for what you say and who you are. He's prayed to his God. He's done it 3 times a day. How does the king respond? The king's not angry. The king is displeased, probably with himself and the decree that he made. He's displeased with his opponents, with Daniel's opponents. He's just displeased with the whole situation. He didn't want to sentence Daniel to death. Why? Because Daniel was his best worker, his best person in government. So he explores all the options. Probably searches the books, the law books. Is there any way out of this? And the answer is no. And Daniel's opponents are right there to remind the king, you've signed the decree. Daniel has broken the decree. Daniel has to be thrown into the den of lions. We read in verses 16 and 17. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, thy God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Now the king didn't want to throw Daniel into the lion's den. He didn't want to do it, but he had to because the law had been signed. The law could not be altered. So Darius issued the decree. Daniel had to be thrown into the lion's den. Daniel was brought. He was thrown into that lion's den. But even as Daniel was thrown into that den, the king was holding out hope. See, Daniel had served God faithfully. It was very evident. And the king said, may your God, this God that you serve continually, may he deliver you. The king had done everything he could to try to deliver Daniel, to no avail. The king could not deliver him. So this pagan king now voices to Daniel, may your God, the one that you serve faithfully, may he deliver you. Now, as we think about this lion's den, there are probably two entrances. There's a main entrance on the ground level. This is the one that Daniel was put in. Then there was a stone that was put over that entrance. And it was sealed with the king's signet and then the Lord's signet, those who are under him. There's also probably an opening at top where people could look down and see the lions. If it was daytime, no doubt. They could see the lions. They could see whoever was in that den. But Daniel was put in through that ground entrance and it was sealed then. What would happen to Daniel? Well, we continue reading. Verses 18 and 19. Then the king went to his palace. He passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Usually the king would go home after a day's work. He'd have all sorts of food to eat and all sorts of entertainments of various sorts. But this night was different. The king was not wanting to eat anything. He couldn't sleep. He had no entertainment at all. His only thought was, I've just thrown Daniel into the lion's den. What's happening to him? Is he devoured by now? Or has God protected him? The God of Daniel, has he protected him? Well, verse 19, then the king rose very early in the morning. See, he couldn't sleep, so he got up early. He went directly, hurriedly, to the den of lions. The sun was just showing its first rays. The king gets to the lion's den. Keeping in mind, the one entrance is sealed off by the stone, so he can't see through that entrance. But up above, he can look down, but everything was dark yet. It was soupy in there. He couldn't see. How was Daniel? He cried out to Daniel. He cried out with an anxious voice. Verse 20. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? And the answer, verse 21. Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God hath sent his angel, and hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me, for as much as before him innocence he was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. God had protected Daniel. Then was the king exceeding glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. So there at the very earliest of morning, just the first rays of sunshine peeking through, the king rushing to the lion's den. He's holding out hope. Maybe Daniel is alive. He reaches the den. He peers down. He can't see anything. But he cries out, "Daniel, servant of the living God, is your God, the God you faithfully serve, is he able to deliver you from the mouth of the lion?" The response, "King, live forever. God sent his angel to deliver me. His angel has shut their mouths. I have no hurt at all. I've been safe. I've been kept safe because I'm innocent. I'm innocent before God. I'm innocent before you, King." The king rejoiced. He was so happy. He didn't even bother to remove that stone from the main entrance. What did he do? He probably had ropes lowered down. Daniel was taken up through that opening on the top. And imagine all of the king's people rushing around him as physicians. Did he need medical attention? Was he somehow hurt? And they couldn't find even one scratch on Daniel. It's amazing. This is God work. This is God at work. God had kept Daniel safe. And the reason why Daniel was kept safe is because he had trusted in his God. Well, Daniel had been kept safe, but what about those who had accused him? Those who were his opponents. Look at verse 24. "And the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them and their children, their wives, and the lions had the mastery over them, and break all their bones in pieces, wherever they came at the bottom of the den." So some would say, well, maybe the lions just weren't hungry when Daniel was in the den. Maybe they were so old that they didn't want to eat any human flesh. Well, that's not the case, because it's very evident whenever Daniel's opponents were thrown into the den, they're thrown in from the bottom, not from the main entrance. Even before they hit the floor of that den, what happened? The lions had already basically broken every bone. They had devoured them, or at least they had killed them to the point where they were starting to eat them. The lions weren't old. The lions weren't just not interested in eating. God had protected Daniel. You think about what had happened in such a short amount of time, the turn of events that had occurred. See, the accusers of Daniel thought for sure they had a way to get rid of Daniel. But instead, what happened? Daniel was protected, and those who had accused him, they themselves were killed. There was this decree made. Anyone that asked anything from any god or man, except from the king himself, would be thrown into the lion's den. Well, Daniel refused to comply. He said, "I prayed to God faithfully through these years. I'm going to continue to pray to God faithfully. I'm not going to compromise. I'm not going to give in. I'm not going to go underground. I'm not going to go secret. I'm going to continue to have a faithful testimony for my God." Yes, Daniel was thrown into the lion's den. But then Daniel was rescued. He was saved. He was delivered. He was kept safe. It's because Daniel was faithful that he was thrown into the den. It's because he was faithful that the king and many others saw how great our God is and how our God keeps those who trust him. He keeps them. Now, not everyone is delivered in this way, but God does love his own. Now, it's because Daniel was faithful that the king, King Darius, made a proclamation. Verse 25. "Then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. In his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed in his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So just like years before, King Nebuchadnezzar had seen Daniel's God at work and had issued a decree and had praised God, so too King Darius. Now, after he had seen personally the power of Daniel's God, he made a decree. The decree is addressed to everyone in his great empire. So thousands upon thousands, maybe even millions upon millions of people hearing this decree. Everybody was to tremble and fear before the great God, the God of Daniel. Everybody must come to realize and understand that God, the God of Daniel, is a great God. He is the living God. He endures forever. His kingdom will never pass away. His kingdom will be forever. This is the God who rescues and delivers. This is the God who does amazing things here on this earth and in heaven above. It is this God who has rescued Daniel from the mouth of the lions. See, Daniel was true, and he was faithful to God. Even when his line was, even when his life was put on the line, Daniel stood fast for God. And it's because of Daniel's faithfulness that Darius and many others came to realize Daniel's God is a living God, a powerful God. He's a God who's in control. So many people wanted to do away with Daniel, but God preserved Daniel. And we read the last verse of the chapter. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So Daniel's opponents, they met a quick end in the lion's den. But Daniel continued to serve the Lord and serve Darius and Cyrus for any number of years after that. Now, as we think about Daniel and his situation, and we think about our situation today, in many respects, we have nothing to face like Daniel faced. Today, there's no decree made from the president or anybody else that says you cannot openly pray or pray, period, to anyone except to the king or the president. There's no decree like that. We're not faced with a life or death situation here. None of us are going to be thrown into lion's den if we do or don't do something. But yet, there are times when we're faced with great pressure. You think of the world around us. Many people pressure us to conform to the world's standard. You know, don't do what God wants you to do. Do what's commonly accepted. Do what feels good. So how do we respond to that pressure? You know, sometimes there's negative consequences if we stand up for what's right. We might have ridicule or opposition or other negative consequences. But whenever that pressure mounts, and there's people telling us, you have to do this or you have to do that, you have to disobey God, how do we respond? Do we buckle down and continue to serve God as we always have? Or do we go underground and become less vocal in our service for God or less visible? Do we compromise? Or do we lessen our commitment to God, or do we continue pressing on all the more serving Jesus Christ? See, Daniel, he was in a place where he could have justified his actions and compromised his faith in God, but he refused to do that. We today, when we're faced with difficult situations, whenever we're faced with a situation where we have to either stand true to God or we have to compromise, we need to stand true to God. Do we dare to be a Daniel? That's a question we have to ask ourselves this morning. Are we willing to stay true to God no matter what? Dare to be a Daniel. Dare to stand alone. Dare to have a purpose firm. Dare to make it known. Will we be like Daniel today? May we follow the example of Daniel. May we stay true to God no matter what the consequences are. May we be willing to give up everything, even our own lives, to stand up for God. You know, there may come a time in this country where it is outlawed to meet together in a place like this, or it's outlawed to proclaim the truth of God. Even in some places in the U.S. right now, there's laws that are enacted, or at least they're interpreted in such a way, that if we stand up for what's right and what we believe, what God says, then we're going to face consequences. Are we willing to stand up and face the consequence? In other places in the world, people, if they stand up for God and Jesus Christ, their life is placed on the line. And many people, believers in Christ, have been martyred for the cause of Christ. Are we willing to go to that extent? Daniel was. We should be willing as well. Lord, may you help us to be like Daniel. May we stay true to you no matter what.